Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Deliver him from pick sixes. Jameis Winston last night, where the Jameis Winston experience, Denton, was on full display in Denver. This dude has always entertained me and NFL fans, I think, and last night was one of his masterpieces. Threw for 497 yards. That is a Cleveland Browns franchise record. He did it against one of the best defenses in the NFL on the road. He threw for 4 touchdowns. But then, what is also part of the Jameis Winston experience, he threw 3 interceptions, 2 of which were returned for touchdowns. Hence, he's just praying for the Lord to deliver him from pick sixes. Good morning. Nikki Javala from the Washington Post will jump on with us in about 20 minutes at 10:25. Ben Volen is the senior NFL writer for the Boston Globe. He'll join us at noon. You know, I've always loved Winston. Those of you that have listened to me for a long period of time know that I've had, for whatever reason, a soft spot for Jameis Winston from the moment he got drafted. I always felt, and I've probably said it no less than 50 times over the years, this is the year. This is the year that he resurrects his career. This is the year that he becomes a star. This is the year, and this is the fit, you know, New Orleans with Peyton or, you know, whatever opportunities he's had. But he just can't stick because while few in the league spin it like he does, few in the league are as fearless as he is. Few in the league are as gunslinger-like as he is, nobody in the league right now does a better job. And in fact, he's on the all-time list of guys that keep both teams in the game simultaneously, his team and the opponent. You know, last night, the 3 picks, 4 touchdowns, 497 yards, you know, that kind of goes up there, remember, with that season in 2019 when he threw for 5,109 yards. He was second in the league with 33 touchdowns, but he also had 30 30 interceptions. I mean, we're in an era where interceptions just aren't what they were 25, 30, 40 years ago. Not for him. He would have fit in perfectly back then. And the second pick six, of course, came with the game on the line. They were down 34-32 in what was a very entertaining game last night. Not necessarily expected. I did not give Cleveland out. I talked about on Friday giving Cleveland out as a smell test pick and to check in. I did not give them out. There was actually sharp money that moved the line up a little bit. But personally, I was on Cleveland last night, Denton. I got it at 6.5, bought the half point, got it to 7. And so there was a lot that was painful down the stretch. 34-32, just under 2 minutes to go. He stares one down and throws it right to the defender. And McMillan makes a great play and then hits the ground, gets up, returns it, pick six, number two on the night, 41-32. And then he's coming right down the field for the easy cover. By the way, all I needed was a field goal. You know, it's 41-32, and I'm thinking maybe they'll just kick the field goal and line up and kick the, you know, try for the onside kick. And they're down at the goal line with plenty of time left. They're down at the Denver 2-yard line after a defensive pass interference penalty, and Winston threw it right to Cody Barton. Remember him? Cody Barton intercepts it in the end zone, and I thought he was going for a pick six, but he got run down by Jerry Jeudy, and the game ended 41-32. Speaking of Jeudy and his return to Denver, 9 catches, 235 yards, and a touchdown, the most yardage ever for a pass receiver in his first game against his former team. On the other side, I thought Bo Nix was pretty impressive. You know, there are some throws that you're like, oh, don't throw it there. There are a lot of those, in fact. But, man, he really does create and extend well. And I think, Denton, when it comes to Nix, because we weren't necessarily huge fans of Nix, because there was a lot of lateral football, a lot of horizontal football at Oregon. The thing that was missed with the style of play, Dan Lanning, Oregon, is that while he didn't throw the football down the field much, it didn't mean that he couldn't throw the football down the field that much. He's got the arm strength. He's got touch, really good touch. His decision-making is still questionable at best at times, but that's what you're going to get with a young quarterback. But I thought Nix accounted for himself pretty well in what was that their first national television game of the year for him? I think it was. I don't know. Maybe they were on it another time that I'm not thinking of. But Denver won the game 41-32. I don't think anybody saw that coming in terms of the final score of the game. I mean, you had two excellent defensive teams. You know, the total went off at 40.5, pretty low total, 73 points scored on Monday Night Football. And the Broncos are 8-5 and really in good shape to make the postseason with a rookie quarterback. So right now, you know, there's a really good chance that two teams with rookies starting at quarterback are going to be in the postseason. Washington and Denver. Denver still has a ways to go, you know, like Washington, you know, same situation. Denver has a solid hold on the seventh spot. Their last four games are, because they have a bye this week too. Washington's the last NFC team to get a bye, but there are another five AFC teams that have a bye this coming Sunday, which is the last bye week of the season. But they've got a huge game coming up against the Colts after the bye week for them. And it's really the Colts right now that have a chance to, you know, catch Denver. That's a huge head-to-head. If Anthony Richardson and the Colts went into Denver on December 15th and won, then they'd be a game back with three to go. And the Colts, by the way, finish with the Titans, Giants, and Jags. So their finish after their head-to-head with Denver is easy. Denver has the Chargers, Bengals, and Chiefs. And I would assume the Chiefs, or there's certainly a possibility, the Chiefs will be playing for the one seed in the first round bye when you get to the final week of the season. That's still a possibility because Buffalo, remember, beat them head-to-head. Wild game last night. And Jameis, he took total accountability. I watched most of the press conference on NFL Network after the game, and he talked about, like, this is on me. I can't do this. I messed it up. And somebody asked him if he said anything to the locker room, and he said, I apologize to everybody. Like, there's not a lack of self-awareness. He knows what his problem is. It's just that his good is so good. I mean, he can really spin it, throw it. He does a great job of, you know, manipulating the pocket because he's not super mobile. But, you know, 3-4 times a game, 5 times a game, he is going to put it up for grabs. And last night, Denver made him pay. Did you watch, Denton, and what did you think?
Yeah, I did watch. I have a couple things. One, when Jameis says that he went around to everybody and apologized, I can absolutely see him going to every single person one by one, looking them eye to
yes.
eye and apologizing.
Selling it.
Overselling it at times. So you mentioned that there's a potential that there could be two rookie quarterbacks in the postseason. Did you hear Joe Buck completely mess that up last night?
I didn't hear it. I heard about it. It just slipped his mind that Jaden was a rookie quarterback.
I have the audio for you. This was Joe Buck. He was building up Bo Nix, which is fine. Bo Nix is great, but he forgot that Jaden Daniels was a rookie quarterback.
Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event is happening now. Get some of the best deals of the season with up to 50% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings delivers big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Skip the long lines or waiting around at home all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Get your whole home installed for one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event today for some of the best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with 2 sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, okay. I mean, he obviously knows Jaden Daniels is a rookie. He just, he blanked there.
I would say that it's because he thinks Jaden is so good that he forgets he's a rookie.
Yeah, well, he is. We talked about this last week. Quinn, for a while, was the favorite, right? And then after the 3 losses, it became O'Connell, right? Is Kevin O'Connell still the favorite? Sean Payton should get a lot of consideration.
Yeah, I think Sean Payton should get some consideration in that. I'm trying to pull up the odds. Coach of the Year odds, for whatever reason, are are kind of weird to find. I have the Rookie of the Year odds in which Jaden is still the favorite, but the traditional Vegas Insider doesn't update their Coach of the Year
here,
odds.
Here, I'll give it to you real quickly. Let me see if I can find them updated. Well, updated, Dan Campbell is a favorite, followed by O'Connell, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Peyton, Quinn.
Dan Campbell should not win Coach of the Year.
He shouldn't. They were predicted to be, at the very least, an NFC championship team. Look, they don't have the division wrapped up at this point. I think the Coach of the Year typically is a guy who got his team to overachieve by a lot. You know, it's a playoff team that wasn't expected to be a playoff team, and not just a backdoor playoff team. Kevin O'Connell's team is 10-2. Right now, if I had a vote, I would vote Kevin O'Connell 1, Sean Payton 2, Quinn. Probably, I'd vote Kevin O'Connell 1.
I'd have Quinn and Tomlin tied for 3.
I was going to say Tomlin would be in the conversation for, you know, with Quinn and Peyton. But Campbell wouldn't be a part of it. And to be honest with you, Jim Harbaugh wouldn't either. I mean, he inherited a team that had Justin Herbert as the starting quarterback. And that team hasn't been bad unless they were injured, you know, with Herbert. A lot of people pick the Chargers to make the playoffs.
They do every year.
Yeah. So I think O'Connell, given what the expectations were, keep in mind, they were probably going to go with J.J. McCarthy, you know, pretty soon, sooner rather than later. And once he got hurt, and by the way, I think he's had 2 surgeries now on that knee, they went with Darnold, and Darnold's been exceptional. I mean, a lot of talent to work with, but the Vikings had a nice schedule to work with for sure. But they're 10-2. They're still pushing Detroit for the 1 seed and Philly for the 1 seed. Who did Minnesota lose to? I'm almost forgetting now. They lost back to back games, right? And they were close.
To the Lions by 2, and then to the Rams.
Rams
by 10.
Thursday night football. Yeah, when Darnold got his head twisted around in the end zone with no flag. But like you just look at the teams, they beat the Giants in the opener. They beat the 49ers in week 2, but the 49ers were already banged up. You know, they beat the Texans. They beat the Packers on the road. They beat the Jets. This last stretch after their 2 losses, Colts, Jags, Titans, Bears, and then the Cardinals. And a lot of those games just barely. I'd vote Kevin O'Connell. I mean, they've got a lot of talent. They just had a quarterback situation in which they were, you know, preseason more likely than not going to go with a rookie. Darnold, we've talked about this before. You know, they love J.J. McCarthy. Darnold is not under contract next year. Darnold has played his way into a starting contract somewhere next year. You agree with me on that, right?
I would say he's played his way into a competition for a starting job next year.
There are too many places that need one. The Jets need one.
Yeah, but don't you think some of these teams are going to draft guys?
Yeah, but the draft doesn't look nearly as promising. Not that anybody knows anything.
That's
understood.
True. But how many spots do you think will be available? Because I look at like the Jets with a question mark on whether or not Rodgers wants to come back.
Let's go Jets. Let's go Browns. Let's go
I'm not convinced the Browns
Titans
will be open.
You're not convinced what? The Browns will be open?
I don't know if they want to move off the Deshaun contract.
Oh, they have to.
They have to.
He's not interested in playing football anymore.
But I don't know
that
if
was
they
clear.
Will.
The Titans, clearly. The Jags, maybe. The Raiders, definitely. I've got, what did I just count in the AFC? I counted the Jets, the Browns, the Titans, the Jags,
well,
they just and
the
Raiders.
They just signed Trevor Lawrence, though, to that $270 million deal.
I know. Okay, so cross them off. So I got 4 in the AFC. In the NFC, you've got the Giants. Mm-hmm. You've got maybe, well, you don't. You can't. It doesn't matter about Dak's health or anything else. They paid him the biggest contract ever. So you got the Giants. You've got the... Do you have the Saints? Yeah.
I would say, yeah, that would be more a competition place, but I would put them in there. I don't think they want Derek.
Do you have the Rams? Is Stafford coming back next year?
I would say he comes back next year.
I would say that. What about the Niners are going to have to, yeah, so I've got six teams in need of a quarterback. Darnold lands one of those jobs as a starter.
One of them. At least two jobs are going to be filled though by Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward.
Yes.
We know that. And then there's going to be a third one filled by whichever quarterback prospect somebody falls in love with. I think it's going to be Jackson Dart with like the intangibles, kind of the way that the Vikings fell in love with McCarthy. Right. And the Bears have fallen in love with like six other dudes in years prior. So there's going to be one of those guys. But like the Raiders, if the Raiders don't land Shedeur, I could see Sam Darnold landing there. But here's a bigger question for you. What about Kirk?
Yeah, I was actually just thinking about Jameis and Kirk because Jameis clearly, like, there. If you don't have one and you can't draft one, you can do so much worse than Jameis Winston. I mean, look at Cleveland offensively with him as a starter. It's a completely different team. And I understand there's major pitfalls. Cousins will definitely, you got a story here at the end of the year with the Falcons. And I actually now think because there was a sign from the defense coming off that bye week, it would not surprise me if they win some games and they're definitely coming here with playoffs, you know, at stake. You know, I'm going to read something from somebody here in a moment that was well done off of my playoff scenario talk yesterday. But anyway, if Penix ends up replacing Cousins, somebody's going to give Cousins a shot, no doubt. Because I think they'll blame it on it takes a while to come off that kind of a surgery to get into a rhythm. Look, he had some massive games this year, but he just played the worst game of his career. And unfortunately for them, it was the first game in which they were decent defensively. So it was the first loss that you could hang on him. And it's been a long time since you could do that. I think he would land a job for sure at 37 years old. I think he would. Let me just get to this real quickly. This was from Gary. Kevin, two things. First, why can't the Commanders beat the Lions or Eagles? Second, you're discounting the 10 wins as a possible loss to Atlanta or Tampa. So in the breakdown, first of all, when you're as good as they are in terms of their best offensively gives them a chance in any game they play. So to answer that part of your question, Gary, you're 100% right. Their best offensively gives them a chance against anybody they play. My problem with looking at the NFC landscape with them in it as part of the postseason is I still don't believe in them defensively, especially against the run. And I think there are two teams that are just flat out much better right now. And they would both be at home, and that would be the Eagles and the Lions. And in the postseason, when you are the underdog, you have to be able to score. There's no doubt, but you also have to be able to stop the run. And so I would be concerned about that at Detroit or at Philly in a 2-7 game. You know, I proposed yesterday this possibility of getting the 6 seed if Green Bay were to falter down the stretch, and they've got a brutal schedule. They play Detroit Thursday night on the road. They play Seattle on the road the next week. They play Minnesota on the road in the next to last week of the season. And Washington would win all tiebreakers with the Packers if they got to, say, 11-6. That would mean Washington would have to win 3 of its final 4 games, and they're likely going to be a favorite in 3 of their final 4 games. But to Gary's point, You know, Atlanta has played, you know, a rough stretch here. Denver on the road, the Chargers at home. They play the Vikings this Sunday. But then they close with the Raiders, Giants, Washington on the road, and the Panthers. And if they were to snag the division, or if they were to beat Washington head-to-head and Tampa won the division, then Washington would be in a position where they would lose tiebreakers in a tie with both Tampa and Atlanta. But if Washington gets to 10, that means that Tampa and Atlanta have to win 4 of their final 5 games. They don't play each other, but they'd have to win 4 of their final 5 games. Tampa already owning the head-to-head, and Atlanta's 4 out of 5. One of them would have to be against Washington for Washington to get bumped from that scenario of a tiebreaker for the 7 seed with Atlanta and Tampa. One of those two teams would win the division, but yeah, it's possible Kirk comes here or the Falcons come here with somebody at quarterback on December 28th or 29th, and that ends up being a very, very important game in the wild card race. So, as far as the Eagles and the Lions, it's been a little bit since we've had two dominant teams. I know that Philly last year, record-wise, and Dallas even, heading into the postseason. But I think, you know, we have thought, you know, for the last few years that there was a clear-cut favorite. I think San Francisco was last year. I think in 2022, the Eagles were actually, you know, a big-time favorite. Although, I think people thought San Francisco had a shot. So, I'll back off that. I was going to say that, for whatever reason, it seems like in the NFC, we've had kind of a single team. This year, there's definitely two. And I would throw the Packers in there, even though I'm suggesting they could falter down the stretch because of their schedule. I'm not expecting that to happen. I'm hoping it'll happen. I'm not expecting it to happen. I think Green Bay's really good. I think Green Bay's better than Minnesota. I do. I think that Green Bay, if we were ranking right now, take records out of it, Denton. The NFC, number one right now for me might be Philly, number two Detroit, number three Green Bay. That would be my top three.
Same, but not probably Philly, definitively Philly is number one for me.
Yeah, I'm now leaning Philly is the best team in the conference as well. All right, Nikki Javala will join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, where you can bet smarter and beat the books, download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, is one of my favorites to have on the show, Nikki Javala from the Washington Post. Nikki, by the way, before she got to D.C., was in Denver, and we were just talking about last night's game and the full-fledged Jameis Winston experience, which is really something else. But, you know, I was thinking about this during the break. You were in Denver, where there is this steeped history, this tradition, which includes, you know, multiple Lombardi trophies, you know, Super Bowl titles, and it's been a while, and now they're having a surprising season with a young quarterback, and now you've been in Washington for several years, where it's been a lot longer since, you know, there's been anything to cheer for. Is that town probably the same as this one in terms of it's been forever and the excitement levels through the roof?
Probably, but Denver hasn't. They haven't been tortured nearly as much as Washington.
True.
Fans.
True.
I mean, their last title was what, 99?
Yeah.
And they, you know, or not 99, 2015. So they've had quite a bit of success and good quarterbacks. But it is kind of strange for me because it feels like both teams are on parallel tracks. And I don't know if I'm to blame or to credit for their resurgence, but I'm going to go with the latter, I think.
By the way, their last Super Bowl was Peyton's Super Bowl,
right,
in 2015.
And that was my first year full-time on the beat. And then when he retired, it's you got to replace a franchise quarterback, and how do you do that? Which is the same thing that Washington has been doing for the last 27 years.
Yeah. I think, though, and you can speak to this more than I can because you've got experience with both now, but that the fan bases in terms of kind of that simmering, ready-to-explode passion is similar. Denver and Washington for a long period of time, and you got to go back a ways, were considered to be two of the three or four best NFL cities in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, totally. And I think the difference with Denver is, you know, because they hadn't been out of it for as long, and there wasn't as much off-field stuff going on, I would say. There was off-field stuff, but not to this degree.
Right. That,
you know, they continued to sell out or have close to sellouts. Because that town that's a Broncos town. I mean, even when the Nuggets win it all, people still really only care about the Broncos. So, you know, the focus has been on them entirely, whereas I feel like in Washington, while there's still so many loyal fans and it is a marquee market and it's sad to watch how it dwindled over the years, you know, they did lose quite a number of people. Don't know that happened in Denver.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, part of it is, you know, just the way this fan base, as you said, went through a completely different experience than the one that Denver's fan base went through. But I think also just two totally different markets, right? I mean, this is East Coast and, you know, people are more cynical and will move on probably faster and maybe are a little bit less loyal. I don't know. I wanted to ask you one other thing, and we'll get to the team here in a moment. But you covered at least one of the teams, right, that Vic Fangio was the head coach of?
Yes, I did.
I mean, the job he's doing in Philadelphia right now, are you surprised?
No. No. I mean, like, what he did in Denver his last year, I had already come up here, but I thought that was one of the more remarkable coaching jobs because I think they had, like, cycled through 10 linebackers that year. I mean, he was not working with the elite of the elite over there, and that defense was still good. The problem was the offense was trash, but the defense was really good. So, no, I'm not surprised. I mean, he has a pair of really good young corners, but, I mean, that's what he does. He's an exceptional defensive coordinator. A head coach, I don't know that he was best suited for that because of all the extra stuff that comes with that job. But this is his bread and butter. He's really good at it. They got some serious talent over there in Philly too.
One more Denver Washington question. So I've found it interesting over the years. We may have talked about this once before, that we had Mike who came from Denver in 2010, Jay who had come from, you know, kind of a smaller market, Cincinnati, in 2014, Ron who had come from Charlotte in 2020, that they were always very sensitive, and I think you know this especially from the last regime, to this being a very, very tough, they would describe it, media market when it came to the team. Mm-hmm. And whenever I would have any conversations with them or people out there, I would say, you guys have no idea. Like,
yeah.
There's no comparison compared to, you know, a New York or a Boston or a Philly.
Right.
You know,
right.
What are the big differences between Denver and Washington when it comes to not just the media market, but the fan market as well, and how they describe and handle the conversation about the team?
Honestly, I think the fan market is pretty similar. I mean, outside of the things we discussed about, you know, fans leaving in Washington, and rightfully so with all the stuff they dealt with over the years. But, you know, like any fan base, if you're not, you know, they booed Peyton Manning at one point in 2015. I mean, he had a really crap game where he had a zero passer rating. But, you know, if they're booing Peyton Manning, you know, everything's fair game, right? But the media market, it's different. I still find it laughable when people say that this is a tough media market. Obviously, I'm biased being in it, but I've also worked in New York, and I mean, anybody knows that. That's
right.
You know how that compares. This is not tough. I mean, you know, there have been tough things that have been dealt with in this media market with this team. But I don't think the questioning has been out of hand. Frankly, I get a lot of messages asking why we don't ask more. But I do think the media markets are different. And this is, you know, of course, no disrespect to my colleagues in Denver, but it is different. You know, I'm trying to find a good way to say this. I think there is a little bit more.
There's more of an edge
within the media market. No?
Realism, you said?
Fanism within I don't want to say homer. I feel like it has such a negative connotation, but
yeah.
You know, it is a bit softer, you know, but they also haven't dealt with,
yeah,
you know, a lot of the things that this team has gone through, so it's different.
What game did Peyton Manning have a zero passer rating in?
It was the game that he broke Marino's passing yards. It was the same game. He broke the record and then had a horrible game, had a zero pass rating, got benched in the third quarter.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he had dealt with, like, a plantar fasciitis. That's when Brock Osweiler came in for, like, six games, I want to say, to the season finale, and then Peyton carried him through the Super Bowl. So,
you know, I always felt like that Super Bowl team, the team that beat Ron Rivera's Carolina Panthers in the Super Bowl, you know, it was clearly defensive-led, Von Miller-led, but I thought in the postseason he played okay. Is my memory off on that or not?
He did. I mean, that offense recorded some of the lowest numbers for a winning offense in the Super Bowl. But, it's sort of like, you know, injured Mahomes is still better than 90% of the quarterbacks. It's sort of the same thing where, you know, Peyton, even when injured, he's just such a smart quarterback that he could still mask a lot of deficiencies that they had on offense and still overcome a lot and still be successful. So I think if it were any other quarterback and they had that offense and relied entirely on the defense, and the defense was one of the best I've watched, I don't think it would have been enough.
Talking to Nikki Javala from the Washington Post, you can follow Nikki on X at Nikki Javala, J-H-A-B-V-A-L-A. So let's go to Sunday and the 42-19 win over the Titans. What does it say about the team that this adversity, for the first time they faced it, not, you know, I felt it was much more so after the Dallas game than after losing to Pittsburgh and Philly, but that they not only bounced back, but they did it with, you know, kind of a changing of the vibe, you know, back to what it was 3.5 weeks ago. Who gets the most credit for that?
Honestly, I mean, I would credit Quinn and Kingsbury. I mean, and I thought the narrative of, I still think the Cliff Kingsbury, you know, narrative about his offense kind of falling off in the second half, I still think that's a misnomer. I mean, yeah. I think each one is, there are different circumstances in each one, so I don't think that there's a direct trend there.
100%.
And the thing I really credit him for, and you don't see this in every coach, is his ability and willingness to adapt on the fly, adapt to his personnel. And he's done that. He did that for this game, you know, like how much did we talk about? I certainly did. I'm guilty of it. Talking about Terry and which side of the field he lined up on and, you know, his early targets. Well, Terry got the first target. He was involved early. He was moved around. Like, he adapts. You know, this scheme is not your traditional air raid. It's tailored to Jaden Daniels. It's built around Jaden Daniels. So to kind of bring that offense back, yes, I do think that Dallas game was primarily execution-based. Like, the players did not play well. But the offense also needed tweaking, and I thought Kingsbury made those tweaks, and the players came through.
Are the tweaks, like, to me, the biggest tweak is they went to a lot of quick passing game, which I think really created this down and distance thing on Sunday. They had 12 third and threes or shorter. I mean, that's I don't know that I've ever seen a number that high of third down and threes or shorter in a game. Yeah. And I felt like they didn't do enough of it. But do you think it was more about specifically Terry lining up more on the right side than he previously done?
No, because everybody knows, like, whether he's on the right side or the left side, Terry, they're going to find Terry, and defenses are going to have a plan for him. But it was more about moving him around, which can open up opportunities for others. And that's what we saw more of. Getting the running game going again was probably the biggest impetus for this victory, I think. And the O-line is, you know, deserves a lot of credit there. I mean, the Titans defense deserves a lot of credit here because they provided clear lanes, which was very surprising because they've been a pretty stout defense against the run this season. But yeah, I mean, they put it all together. It looked like the team we saw in week 3 and 4. Jaden looked like himself again. You know, and Tyler, you see it in the energy he plays with. I usually hate that word energy because it's such a vague BS kind of term, but like you could actually see it in him in the game and the way he ran his explosiveness, you know, the way he's seeing the ball, just, you know, he had it again. So yeah, they were firing on all cylinders on Sunday.
So what are they going to do about kicker?
Yeah, I mean, at this point in the season, I don't know how many, you know, they know that Zane can make some kicks. Him missing those two are just not great. I still kind of think they signed him. I could be wrong, but it's still, you know, Quinn said he's still confident in him. I still think they sign him, get through, you know, the next 3 games. If you make a run in the postseason, see where Austin's at. But, yeah, I mean,
don't they have to bring in kickers? It's the perfect time to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they could. It's just, you know, think about how many kickers they've brought in and cycled through already. Are there ones out there that they don't know about at this point?
Like, yeah, maybe not, unless somebody cuts Justin Tucker or the guy in Atlanta, Koo, who's missed a bunch of kicks. It's been weird, and I don't have the data. It's just more kind of watching a lot of football on Sunday. It seems like there have been a lot of missed field goals around the league.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of blocked field goals. There are definitely been more blocked field goals. Yeah, the Justin Tucker one still weirds me out. I mean, I know he's getting older, but he's a kicker. To me, that just looks like he has the yips.
Totally. Yeah, he's got the yips. All right, so we'll see what happens there. By the way, I thought that the whole Austin Seibert thing was, you know, maybe not
weird,
necessarily suspicious, but it certainly was intriguing because it was a groin, it wasn't the hip, and when did it happen? Because he didn't show any signs of it happening during the game. What do you think happened there? Do you think they just wanted to move on from him and that was the easiest way to sort of part ways in the interim?
I mean, why not just cut him if you wanted to part ways with him? I mean, that was...
Because he had only missed two kicks heading into that game, it would look kind of strange.
Still their prerogative, but that's why I don't think they totally wanted to move on from him. I don't know. It is a little weird. I tried asking around, you know, like anything with injuries, I feel like you never get the full answer. So I think what is throwing everybody off with that is when he said in the locker room after... it was a Dallas game, right?
Yeah.
When he said it was my decision to play, and that
right.
And maybe it was this case that like he overruled an athletic trainer's or the doctor's advice. That's how it came off. That's how it read that quote. Nobody said that's true because then, you know, it was a different injury that they put him on IR with, but yeah, it is a little odd. It is a little odd, but I also think if they want to part ways, you could just cut him. You did have Zane right there and he had made some, if they felt it was serious enough to do 4 games, that's why they did it. Otherwise,
do we know, switching subjects, do we know, Nikki, that they tried to trade Emmanuel Forbes before the deadline and there just weren't any takers?
Yeah, I believe they did, yeah.
All right, and he got picked up by the Rams yesterday off waivers, so we'll see how that works out.
It's great for Washington, saves them $5 million in cap space.
That he got picked up?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't even realize that. What about Lattimore? Does he make his debut against his former team after the bye week in New Orleans?
I think so. I mean, all signs are pointing that way. A week ago he was close. And, you know, they held him. I figured they would hold him out this week to give him another 2 weeks of rest. So I would think so, barring any major setback.
Who are this team's Pro Bowlers? Because we're getting to that time of year.
Oh, man. Receiver is always hard because there are some really good receivers. Yeah, in the NFC. Though I think Terry is definitely deserving. Will he make it? I think he was fourth among receivers in the first round of fan voting.
Okay.
I think Jaden makes it. Probably Wagner and or Luvu, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of it. Biotis, perhaps. I'm trying to think who else.
You hit. I mean, Jaden, Terry, Luvu, and Wagner were like the four that I was like. They. I know Fowler's got 8.5 sacks and is fourth in the NFC in sacks, but Luvu's the better player. It's what is it? 1/3 fans, 1/3 media, 1/3. How does it break down? Do you have a vote?
No, okay. I don't. Well, I don't know who these. I don't know who the media vote is.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's coaches, I think.
Yeah.
Coaches and executives, yeah.
All right, so 4 games when they come back. What do you think? Is this a team that will win 2 more, get to 10, and make the playoffs?
I mean, they should. I mean, they should beat New Orleans. I know it's in New Orleans, but they should beat that team. Philly could be tough. Even though it is at home, it's not totally we know how Philly games go in Landover, right? At Dallas, that's a beatable team. I feel silly saying that since they were very beatable before and, Washington got their butt kicked. I think they have a very good shot for the playoffs. If they can just not implode and have more games like they did against Dallas, I think they should be okay. But
lastly, I know you're not covering this maybe as closely as, some other people. I know you've been involved in the reporting on this, so I don't want to diminish it. You can tell me if I'm wrong here. But you have a sense, I'm sure, about how this Senate vote on what the Senate subcommittee passed last month. Do you think that the Senate will attach this to a bill? The RFK site will be cleared for the city to negotiate with the team? And just give me how you think this plays out, best hunch.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's always hard to say with politicians. You never know. I did not see the Steve Daines, grandstanding come.
Right.
But I think it ultimately passes. I'm sure you saw that Goodell was in town for the game. Adam Silver was also in town for the game. And Goodell was, meeting with senators along with Josh Harris. So they're really pushing to drive this through. So I think ultimately it does. It's more of a hunch than anything. But we'll see. I mean, it would be tough if they don't get it on a bill. I mean, just they got to restart the bus. And I think the progress this team has made on the field, but also the changes Josh Harris and his ownership group have made off the field, with bringing in as many new partnership deals as he had. I think it was up to 31 as of, week ago, 31 within the last year. I think that speaks to, how this team can drive business. And that's huge for the city. I mean, I know other owners view DC as one of the major markets, as they should, for business, for the league, and having a stadium is a big part of any NFL team now. It's become a major real estate business. So getting the team back at RFK would be huge, and I ultimately think it does, but it's more just gut feeling than anything.
All right. Thanks. Always love catching up with you. I appreciate it. Hope you're well.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Nikki Jamvala, everybody. We'll get to some Denton news. Ben Volen, the senior NFL writer for the Boston Globe, will join us. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. You want to hold off on the news since we're really tight on time here and do it in 5 minutes?
We can do that.
Because I wanted to share something with you. And I thank my good friend Ben Standing for providing me with the data. I'm assuming it's from like True Media, which I think they have subscriptions to and I don't. So he's great in sharing this with me. But he had said something when he was on the show yesterday. He said that, you know, the Tennessee game Sunday was the most that Terry had lined up on the right side of any game this season, which is true. He lined up 9 times on the right side. He was in the game for 66 snaps on Sunday. So 13.6% of his snaps were on the right side, and you know, the majority of the others were on the left. There were some slot lining ups on both sides as well. But did you know that that percentage of lining up on the right was not the highest of the season? You got to go back to week 3 when he lined up on the right side on Monday Night Football against the Bengals 7 times and was only out there for 50 snaps. That's 14% of the time. So, yes, he lined up the most on the right side that he had lined up in any game this year, but they also had 83 called plays, and if you include penalties, he was out there for 66 of the snaps, and the percentage of the time that he was on the right side was not the highest of the year. So, yes, there is this thought that Cliff got convinced to start putting Terry on the right side. Actually, last week against Dallas, he was on the right side 6 times. Not 9, 6 out of 57 snaps. That's, you know, closer to 11%. So it's a little bit less than the Tennessee game. But just, you know, what we saw Sunday wasn't like this massive recognition of, oh my God, Cliff finally got it through his thick head that Terry should line up on the right side. Actually, I think what's more important is that there were more, you know, times where Terry had kind of moved around and had seen the slot perhaps a little bit more than he had. And by the way, I love Terry in the slot. When they get the matchup they want, if they can get him into that slot and get him in that matchup that he wants, that was something that I thought Scott Turner did particularly well with Terry in 22 and 21. But yeah, I know, you know, this isn't a, hey, you know, ignore what happened when it comes to Terry's right side versus left side. You do want, I think, look, at this point, I kind of trust Cliff, all due respect to, you know, the Cliff people and the right side, left side people. They've been one of the top 4 or 5 offenses in the NFL for pretty much the entire season, and they have a rookie quarterback playing, and they've got a lot of new players in different spots. I think he's done a pretty damn good job this year. But with respect to right-left, the highest percentage of snaps with Terry lining up on the right side this year was actually the Monday night game against the Bengals, not Sunday's game against Tennessee. All right, we'll get to Denton's news when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.